airwaves from unknown positions. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded. You're listening to WORT Madison. Disregard the mainstream media distorted. We come and listen and support it. Wow! I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good, so good. I got a year. Wow, I feel nice. A sugar and spice. I feel nice. A sugar and spice.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show. I'm Mel. Floyd is on assignment, but with us, as always, the man who knows everything, including the fastest way to drive back from Columbus, Mr. Smarty Pants.
That's Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah.
It's. I went through this. It
was you just got back.
I did. Just got back. I went through a wormhole.
minutes ago.
Yeah, so it's here I am. Here for you, the radio listener. Yeah, I was visiting my aunt. I have an aunt who lives there an aunt, as they say in the upper Midwest, that I love dearly, and was helping her out. She's in her early 80s now. And poor thing, she has a friend group, and everybody, this will happen to you two kids unless you get hit by a bus or something. Everyone's kind of succumbing, so she had a couple of friends die from cancer a couple years ago, and she's got a couple of friends right now, close friends that are with cancer. And so just trying to come and have, you know, perk up things a little bit, help her out a little bit. She had some furniture in storage, which companion and I helped her get out of storage, and she put in her apartment, and that cheered her up immensely.
Oh, good. She didn't have any cats in the freezer this time.
No.
Or is that somebody else?
No, that is she. Yeah. I'll tell you what she does. Maybe I mentioned this before, but she is very concerned with animal welfare, and she works for a cat rescue group in Columbus. And what she does is interesting. She makes little toys. They're little tiny squares of cloth that have catnip inside. And she and the other old gals go out stalking along the railroad tracks trying to find... Trolling for catnip.
Oh, for catnip.
Yeah, so what they do is there's this place where they sell them, and then that helps to raise money and awareness for this cat rescue group that she belongs to.
To put the cats in rehab.
Put them in rehab, yeah. Those things are potent. I brought them back for friends with cats, and those cats, they're immediately stoned. I mean, it's just like, I don't know how much she puts in there. But she thinks a hefty amount is appropriate.
Yeah,
and then then she and the other gals go out and they found...
Well, like, the cats are in a shelter. They're stressed, so they need something.
Yeah, well, this is, they sell them to, like, you know, people coming in.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so the idea is they raise a little money through making this. Laborers volunteer, they go out and get the catnip themselves. And it's funny because sometimes you'll see, like, you know, somewhere along the train tracks are a great place, like on a berm, because it doesn't have a lot of competition there, you know, where you build up a little berm for the train track.
Yeah.
And every now and then, somebody from one of the train companies will be like, "What are you ladies doing over there?" It's like, we're stalking for catnip. So.
Right.
So, at any rate.
Can't we give that land to, like, the billionaires or something? I mean, they could...
I thought that's what happened originally. Except they were millionaires back then. But, you know, now we've inflated that. But you know what? Well, the nice thing about the week, in addition to being with my aunt, was... I didn't think about a certain person who lives in the White House all week. And then I came back and I was doing a little bit of, you know, before the show, looking up some stories. And everything I found, and I just realized this as I was sitting here, Trump huffs, victory for Trump, Trump's approval, Trump tariff, Trump administration, Trump wrong, Trump pick, Trump, 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 Trump. That's all it is.
When you're the king, people talk about you.
Yeah, I guess. Especially if you're poking people's eyes out daily. It's just to watch them die. I mean, you know.
Let's pull the wings off some flies and see how that goes. So, what about his meeting with the president of
Ramaphosa, South Africa? Yeah. Oh, gosh. There's a quote here I found. It's from a South African political commentator named Varashni Pillay. And she was saying that, she said, so much about this administration is not about facts. Trump was just, this is a quote directly from this political commentator, Trump was just ranting. And if Ramaphosa had asked which farmers have, which white farmers had had their heads chopped off, it would have descended in what we saw with Zelensky. So instead, he apparently he made like a quip you were mentioning to me.
Yeah, he said, I wish I had a plane to give you. Which what that shows is that the rest of the world is laughing at us. I mean, they're laughing at how openly corrupt everything has gotten.
Yeah, we're the loser nation now. We think we're so great, and then we got this, we got that thing.
Remember when we were like the USSR was the bitter enemy, and you know, the anti evil anti America.
Sure,
and we seem to have emulated them to a great extent.
Took on all the characteristics of that group. Yeah. So I as I said, I got the honor of not having to deal with this for a whole week. People in South Africa, by the way, think it's hilarious that these white descendants of the colonizers who were responsible for apartheid are, you know, seeing themselves as victims. It has an eerie echo to things going on in the United States.
Yeah.
I just want to mention in passing, by the way, that out of the populations of evangelicals, those with the evangelical faith in the world, South Africa is third in terms of percentage of the population that avows an evangelical faith.
Are we first?
We are first. Yes, of course we are. Some people think that's hilarious. They said they came with nothing, talking about the Afrikaners. Mm-hmm. They took everything, and then with the smallest inconvenience, they leave.
Hey, you looked at me funny. I'm going to Idaho. I'll show you.
Lord.
Well, all the Republicans in the House passed the tax bill.
Yeah.
And first of all, They actually literally named it the Big Beautiful Bill.
Of course they did.
I mean, do we have to dumb down everything to the level of the toddler in chief? I mean, that's just
yes.
It's just disgusting.
You learn nothing. Get with the program, man. We're only on month five. When are you going to break?
And it only passed by one vote.
Yeah.
So
215 to 214.
So don't talk. I mean, but they're already talking about
it's a mandate.
We had a mandate to do this.
Yeah. You know, the how often they talk about mandating, I'm a little worried about them.
I was reading earlier, this is stupid, I didn't even bring it in because it was so stupid, but this guy on Fox News has rules for men on things men shouldn't do in public,
right.
And one of them was eating soup for some reason, but the other one was drinking out of a straw.
Indeed.
And then they had some congressman from, I forget, Texas or something, agreeing with him and saying, it's not manly to drink out of a straw. What? I think they're kind of projecting something else.
Yeah, something's going on
in
there.
Anyway, I don't want to go there.
Especially not jumbo straws.
Yeah, no.
That's the word.
These little straws. Yes, Mr. President.
Well, when faced with that, like rules for being a man, I mean, I think choosing the gender non-binary is just the way to go. I mean, you're telling me that's what it is? Okay, I'm done.
I haven't quite figured out the eating soup thing, but it's all
eating soup. I guess you're supposed to tear into the food
with your jaws
and your.
I saw another thing
giant
this week. Some influencer was trying to pass off this great health tip to use water when you're cooking, water-based cooking. And somebody just responded, said, that's just soup.
Water-based
instead
cooking.
Of oil, I guess. I don't know. Oh. But, I mean, it's not a new concept. I mean, people have been cooking.
So where are the influencers that are telling men to, be kind to people that aren't as strong as them,
right?
And, you know, all the traditional chivalry. I mean, let's bring back knighthood, if you're willing.
There you go.
You know,
we're getting there.
At least the knights. You know, they were supposed to be charitable and chaste, you know, and protecting the weak and all sorts of things like that. I mean, that's not a very nice way of thinking about things either. It's very inegalitarian, but at least has a certain kind of respect embedded in it.
At least you're not walking around kicking puppies and stuff.
You're not kicking puppies and betting everything you see and, you know, whatever they think the man is supposed to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever. Well, it builds on itself, doesn't it? This is the problem with all this stuff. It's like a Darwinian jungle of ideas. You know, it's like, what, you think that? Well, I got to be more crazy. I got to be crazier than you. Here's my gigantic peacock feather of an idea. You know? Look at me. Look at me. Look at me. You know, it's like, so they don't use a little longer. And the problem is, it is like being in a rainforest. Like with our, you know, worldwide electronic communication system, everybody's competing with everybody now. It's not just you're competing with the people in Boise or wherever. I mean, you're competing with every single human on the face of the earth. So the peacock feathers of crazy ideas have to get more elaborate and bizarre and striking all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess we have a checklist of things men need to do.
Yeah.
I thought we were done with those.
Well, our brain is wired too for outrage and anger and fear.
Yeah, like I just had.
Yeah. And our brain kind of
Exhibit A.
Our brain kind of likes that. We get a little, I don't know, dopamine or something when that happens. So you want to keep feeding that.
Yeah.
And the part of your brain that's fear-based, the amygdala.
Amygdala.
Yeah, they found that the people who buy into a lot of conspiracy theories or right-wing people. Let's be honest here.
My throbbing amygdala.
They have larger amygdalas.
Because it's
been exercised more.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm simplifying, of course, here, but
you guys need your amygdala muscle exercise.
There you go. We could be an amygdala influencers.
Ooh, I think we found our niche. Or niche. Real man wouldn't say niche.
Real men don't eat niche. But anyway, I started talking about the tax bill about 20 minutes ago. And here are just some of the lowlights of it.
Yeah, okay.
It's a nearly $4 trillion extension of the 2017 tax cuts.
Which really helped our economy.
Yeah, which, of course, overwhelmingly benefit the wealthy. And that's another thing. The headlines would say things like you'd see on these stories, saying, a tax cut bill is passed. And it's like, oh, good, tax cuts. Oh, good, I don't mind paying taxes.
Does anybody even pay attention to that anymore?
I don't know.
But, who knows?
So there's nearly $700 billion in Medicaid cuts, which could cause almost 9 million people to lose coverage. $267 billion cuts to food stamps, SNAP, kicking 3 million families off assistance and jeopardizing school meals for 18 million kids.
Yep. That would have been me.
A massive increase in defense spending. It's $1 trillion defense budget, by the way. So $1 trillion.
And what are they going to do with that trillion
dollars? I don't know. And plus over $100 billion for Trump's mass deportation efforts.
Wow.
Well, they want to have a golden dome. They had to call it that.
What?
It's like an updated version of the Star Wars missile defense program. But they're calling
it. I haven't even heard of that.
They're calling it the Golden Dome.
Of course, it's golden. Yeah.
$300 billion in cuts to student loan programs.
Wow.
Let's see. The richest Americans, those making $1 million or more, would get nearly $90,000 in tax breaks each year. The average family earning less than $50,000 would get less than $1 a day.
Hmm. So neo-feudalism, basically.
Yeah.
Well, now we know what their views are.
But as I said, it only passed by one vote.
Yes.
And
who was that person?
Well, it was just party line.
Oh, yeah.
But a Republican, it could have been by two votes, because a Republican congressman missed the vote because he was asleep.
I think the other ones also were asleep when they voted.
Just metaphorically.
Yeah.
Oh, what was the guy's name here? He was Andrew Barrio. Barrio. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure where he's from, but he was, because they had it in the middle of the night. And so he was just dozing, and then, oh, was there a vote? Oh, let's find out where he's from here. Da-da-da-da.
Military.
New York. New York's second congressional district.
So he must be up north somewhere.
Yeah.
There. Hey, they're doing an analysis of President Trump's popularity. With whom is he the most popular? And they found out something really interesting. This was something that the New York Times and Siena College had looked into. They pooled their resources. And they discovered that voters who have not heard much about what President Trump has been doing in his first 100 days are more likely to say that he's doing a good job. A little under half of the 42% of voters who approved of the job Mr. President is doing said they had not heard much about the ups and downs of his administration's decisions.
It's pretty much under the radar.
So 42% approve, and of that, about 20% don't know what the heck's going on. This is the thing. Trump has traditionally done well with what they call low-information voters. Mm-hmm. So it's really not surprising that this is tracked with what's happened in the past. The problem, of course, these voters are also notoriously difficult for pollsters to reach. So you can't always tell when you're like predicting what's going to happen in an election where Trump is involved, how big of a margin he might win by if he wins.
Yeah.
Because these folks are sort of
a lot of them have ephemeral. trouble getting out of their house because they can't figure out the doorknob. It's like lefty loosey, righty tighty. I don't know. How does this doorknob thing work?
Part of the thing, too, of course, is there's been so much stuff that even if these poor people, and I sympathize with them, to tell you the truth, I would, of course, do something different with my opinions if I had no information coming in. But nonetheless, I kind of sympathize with this. A lot of them have disengaged because they can't keep track of all the stuff that's going on.
Right.
And that kind of does... That does kind of make sense.
So a lot of that's intentional. I mean, it's the fire hose of BS to so you can't keep up. And it's also making it where you don't want to follow it because it's just ugly and so acrimonious. And so, I can see where you just want to tune out and say, well, it doesn't.
You won't be surprised by the next thing. And this might give, again, I think this might give the opponents of the president some cheer. Voters are more likely to disapprove of how Mr. Trump is handling immigration if they know about the case of Mr. Abrego Garcia, of course, who the administration acknowledges was mistakenly deported but won't do anything to get him back. So it turns out that just given that one little piece of information, people will view his, because among these voters that don't know much, the immigration thing is the one they give him the big credit for.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, it's not based on, that's not based on facts. That's based on fears and, you know, cultural change.
Amygdala.
All sorts of other things. Mm-hmm. So, lots of things have been bad. So, for example, the start of Trump's term had the worst drop in the S&P 500 for new president since 1974. So like a 50-year, difference there. But a lot of people have not heard much about the stock market fluctuations, or if they have, they don't know what it means.
Yeah.
So at least a lot of people who are in his column.
A lot of the low-information citizens, voters, whatever you want to call them, they don't really react until something triggers them, like gas prices, or that's a big one, you know, and because it's right there, it's in big letters, and you have to see it, every week or so when you fill up your gas tank. And
so Chris, I'm not surprised by this because I've experienced it directly. I remember vividly back in the day, there was a woman who had a giant poster of Nixon on the side of her little shack down in eastern Kentucky, and she had voted for Nixon. It's just there for years, and somebody from one of the local news crews in I think it was in West Virginia came over and asked her about the Nixon posters and what did she think about Nixon and Watergate and all that, and she said, "Oh, I don't follow the news." you take your pick and then you just stick with it. You don't really pay much attention to the details.
I always like to compare it to sports. It's like
that's my team.
I'm a Packard fan. Bears suck, and there's nothing you could do to change my mind on that.
Well, that makes sense.
I was reading. I don't know if you remember when this happened, but Bill Nye, the Science Guy, did a debate with
a man with no amygdala. He's amygdala free.
He is. He had that removed at birth. But I was reading about, it's an old story, but I was reading about this, and he had a debate one time with Ken Ham from the creationist Noah's Ark Museum.
Oh yeah, in Kentucky. Oh yeah. From Florence, Kentucky.
Yeah, and the moderator asked Bill Nye. He said, "So, what would it take for you to change your mind?
Sure, that's fair.
And he said, "Well, evidence that would convince me." And he said, "Okay." So then he asked Ken Ham. He goes, "What would it take for you to change your mind?" He goes, "I won't change my mind."
Yeah, I know. Well, and that's that difference in epistemologies is what makes it difficult to have a conversation over the aisle, because that group is now a predominant, at least they have a lot of control over the Republican Party, the people with that way of thinking, that if you admit that if you know something, you know it absolutely. And to say, to shade it or say that it might not be true, to just say that it might not be true, just like it's possibly not true, is in and of itself a sign of weakness.
Yeah. Well, that's a sign of authoritarianism. Yeah. That's a very...
Imagine a world where that wasn't true. I can't. Yeah. It's impossible.
Yeah. Well, I remember, you know, when George W. Bush was running for re-election, they had a town hall, and somebody asked him, "What would you do differently in your first term if you could do it over? Did you make any mistakes or something like that?" And he started this flop sweat started coming out of him because it was like, "What, it doesn't compute." And he goes, "Oh, I wouldn't change anything." And this was after like things were not going well. I mean,
but see, that ability to visualize counterfactuals is really the basis of the whole epistemology of modern science. The idea is, what if the way we human beings perceive things, what if that's not the way things actually are? Yeah. That's what you have to start with. And then you build on that to create a really, really rigid structure for determining what evidence is and how it's used and, you know, predicting and then trying to see if it's working. Making things like, you know, double-blind testing, all those things, they're all premised on the idea that just because it seems to us they're a certain way, there could be a gap there. We can sort of imagine a counterfactual situation where somehow we've gotten it wrong.
Yeah.
If you don't have that, then you really don't have a way of figuring out how the world works.
Right. So, and I'm as guilty of this as anybody, but a lot of times you'll see these studies that appear painfully obvious. It'll say, like, you know, older men like attractive younger women or something. And then and you go, "Oh, no kidding, Sherlock." You know? But I mean, you have to actually, you know, as you say, go through that process that you just described.
That's a good point.
You know,
a lot of times
because it seems intuitive.
Just because we all think that doesn't mean. Yeah. And then you find out maybe this is more nuanced or something like that. So, you know?
Yeah.
I remember the famous study where they asked these college age men if they would have sex with this random woman, and huge numbers of them said yes, like right off the bat without any hesitation.
Most of them were dropping their pants at that point
before the questionnaire got done. And but they did. There was a fly in the ointment. It depended on whether there was something else they had to do right away. That was the So, funny. You need to know that part.
Like, get my oil changed at 2.
Yeah. 2:15.
It's a 10-minute oil change.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll be there.
Jiffy Lube.
Oh, God. So, the World Health Organization is meeting...
Who?
The WHO.
Oh, yeah. I love those guys. They were great.
Yeah. So
keep Who's next?
They keep firing Ringo Starr's kid. They're going to hire Pete Best's kid next.
You think? All right. That's a good idea.
But no, the World Health Organization, they're meeting, and it's a first, though.
Yeah.
It's the first time the U.S. has not been there.
Yeah.
Because we don't believe in any of that stuff.
Well, they were going to send... Crazy Pants Junior, or whatever his name is.
Brainworm.
Yeah. And another thing.
Now.
No, I know. I shouldn't make fun of his. That's a genuine condition. That's not a nice thing to say, I guess. What is this?
It's a story in Salon. It says, RFK Jr. is laundering Christian right views as Make America Healthy Again.
So. I have a hard time with that, though. I really do, because some of the stuff that he says, I actually completely agree with. You know, he had released this report. Now, it wasn't complete, but you have to give him some credit. He said that a lot of the problems with health among children today, you could actually sort of say it's obvious. It's ultra processed food, chemical exposure, stress, no physical activity. I mean, remember when they started cutting out recess from school days, overuse of prescription drugs. I mean, I think that those are
all valid things.
Those are all valid things.
But it's like if your car is not running right, and like you put really crappy gas in it that had water in it, and the mechanic says, "Well, you got water in your gas. This isn't. Yeah. Your car's not running right. I'm going to pour some chocolate syrup in there, and that'll clean it up.
Yeah.
You know? I mean,
yeah.
It's like his solutions.
Right. Yeah. I agree.
Are banana pants.
But maybe we could have fewer chicken McNuggets. He's already creating conflict within his group. There was a senator from Mississippi who got in his case. And she was like, are you saying the pesticides are bad for children and other living things?
You know? You mean this chemical that kills living things?
Yeah. How could that be bad? I mean, and so, you know, I mean, in a way, it's an the Trump group is an unstable coalition in many ways. And there's a great example of that. Because, I mean, he's putting that out there. And here's somebody that's obviously representing agribusiness. And she's saying, stop saying that kind of thing.
Right.
Because, you know.
No, that's a good point.
A few kids die here and there. That's the cost of business.
But again, he's the guy who like pulls over to the side of the road and cooks up some roadkill too. I mean, so, you know, you gotta.
Well, again, I live in Eastern Kentucky when I was a kid, so I'm not sure that I see that.
I was at a rest stop in West Virginia one time.
Yeah.
And then there was a family next to us that had the hood of their car open, and they're all like looking under the hood.
Yeah.
And I know nothing about cars, but you know, I'm a boomer white guy, so I had to walk over, you know, and say, everything okay? Hey,
let me give you some of my non-expertise.
Hey, hit it with a hammer.
Yeah, right, exactly.
But as I got closer, I noticed they had like a big package wrapped in aluminum foil.
Sure.
On the engine block.
On the engine block, yeah.
And they were just cooking there, and they were checking to see if it was done.
Yeah, I remember doing that. My dad used to do amateur stock car racing, and we would sometimes do things like that. Hot dogs. You put hot dogs on there.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
So
we put down, of course, we were the civilized ones. We put down some foil first, you know. Ooh, look at them. Hoity-toity.
Well, I mean, here's another headline that shows the disconnect. RFK Jr. wants healthier school lunches, but they canceled the program that does
that.
Yeah,
well, that's the other thing, right? It's a lot of jargon, a lot of hot air.
We should do this. Well, it's like Musk and his efficiency. It's like that had nothing to do with efficiency.
Who are you talking about?
He's
a non-person now, isn't he?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. He's one of those white Africans we're sending to Idaho.
Wasn't Trotsky in that picture? Yeah.
It's a big gap in the right side of that photo.
A kid seems to be floating in the air. Yeah. Right.
Well, we have to have a military parade too to celebrate the president's birthday. I mean, you can't get any more Soviet than that. I remember growing up, and they like on May Day, the Soviets would always have these big parades, and we always felt kind of superior. It's kind of like, oh, look at those guys showing off their military.
How childish.
And here we are.
What I always loved is, you may remember this again, is that the Soviet generals, they didn't have like we have in the United States, where when they got a ribbon, all they would have is like a little square, and then they would put that little, you know, like a medal for something.
Yeah.
They would just put the color of the ribbon to indicate the medal. But in the old Soviet Union, they would put the actual medal. So you could have like a guy with like 37 giant medals on one side.
He's bent over, listening
to one side. Yeah. I always like how many orders of Lenin did you actually get?
43. Let's see. Wisconsin education spending. Wisconsin's working on their budget right now, too.
Okay.
Funding for Wisconsin's public higher education system drops to sixth worst in the nation.
So
we're 44th now in spending on higher education.
Mississippi, here we come.
another Wisconsin related story. Secretary of Transportation Sean Duffy. He unloaded a whole bunch of stocks 2 days before Trump made an announcement about tariffs that tanked the market.
So he had Marjorie.
He was smart.
I don't think he was smart. I think he was informed.
He was in the meeting.
Right, exactly.
There's actually a lot of like the money people now complaining about that, saying Trump's just manipulating the market every time he blasts off something about now we're gonna throw tariffs on Apple or something, and like he did yesterday. And
yeah, well, you ever heard of the Russian stock market?
No,
that's a good reason. There's a good reason for that. Who would invest in the Russian stock market? It's a mug's game, right? I mean, that's the thing. It's like, it's the more of this that we do, everything that we have that, I mean, you know, it's pillars of whatever it is that we have here as a society, all those things are rotting away.
Yeah, so
you know, nobody's going to invest in an economy that's so obviously skewed in favor of a certain class of people who are pretty, seems like pretty feckless.
Yeah. So. Well, and it's just so erratic, too. I mean, it's like, oh, the tariffs are only, you know, 10%. That's fine. I can work with that. And then the next day, they're 50%. Yeah. And it's like, oh.
Because you looked at me funny.
Yeah.
He had a couple of stories from abroad. I won't tell you which abroad. Russian forces have been beefing up bases and building military infrastructure near the Finnish border, according to to satellite imagery. This imagery was confirmed by NATO officials. It shows row after row of new tents, new warehouses, renovations to fighter jet shelters, and they've got some helicopter bases they've been building. So far, it seems like they're building up all along the border there with NATO, as much of stuff as they can. You know, for now, Russia is, of course, preoccupied with Ukraine, but the Finns have been fighting the Russians over and over again. Companion and I were in Finland, what was it, gosh, 5 or 6 years ago now? And we actually, there's a park that commemorates all the times they went to war with Russia, basically. It's like, here's the third one, monument, and here's the fourth monument.
The 10th monument's free.
Yeah, the 10th monument free, exactly. It's, Finland just joined NATO, and so that's probably part of the problem. Mm-hmm. There's an 830-mile frontier that's now part of the NATO alliance, and the Russians aren't terribly happy about that. But, the Finns have, think they have 5 years or so before Russia can start to be up at threatening levels. Wow. So they're building it up.
I would not mess with the Finns. I know a few of them. They're somewhat... The ones I know are somewhat flinty.
They invented the biathlon, okay? Shooting while skiing. So don't screw with them, okay?
Good point. Hey, you're listening to the Mel and Floyd Show here on WORT 89.9 on the FM. You might be listening on the internet at WORTFM.org, or you could be listening in the future if you're living in one of those sky cities with artificial gravity.
Yeah.
And because we put these shows and all of our shows up in the archives page. And thanks to our pal, Mindless Minion D-Cubed, you can get these things they call podcasts through Spotify or Apple Pods.
Podcasts, you say?
Yeah. I don't know. It's something to do with sweet peas. I don't know what's going on there. Hey, we're going to take a brief break, and then we're going to come back with...
We're going to come back with some more non-Trump related.
Yeah, news. We'll try to stretch out the topics a little bit. I've got some monkeys kidnapping other monkeys.
That's a good one.
And
yes,
fear for the semicolon.
Ah.
Support for this program comes from WORT's listener sponsors and Isthmus Newspaper. Isthmus is back on newsstands the first Thursday of every month, and now a nonprofit. Isthmus continues to expand its independent coverage of local government, the arts, and all things Madison at isthmus.com.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and the Wine and Hop Shop, located at 1919 Monroe Street, specializing in home brewing and winemaking supplies for over 40 years. Open to in-person shopping or order online for curbside pickup, in-Madison delivery and shipping of supplies at wineandhop.com.
WORT is excited to be in our 50th year, and to help celebrate, we are hosting the opening night of Madison's newest venue, the Atwood Music Hall. Join us on Friday, June 13th, for a great night honoring Clyde Stubblefield. The night features performances from Mama Dig Down's Brass Band, The Funky JBs, VO5, Rare Element, DJ Trevor Banks, and Kaboombox. Andy Moore from the Friday 8 o'clock Buzz will host the evening celebrating 50 years of WORT and the grand opening of Madison's newest venue at 1925 Winnebago Street. Proceeds from the evening benefit WORT. Tickets are $25 in advance and available now at theatwoodmusichall.com. Be sure to shine up your dancing shoes and grab your tickets before they're gone.
Madison Public Theater invites you to their production of A House Not Meant to Stand, opening May 8th and running through May 24th at the Bartell Theater. Written by Tennessee Williams and directed by Julia Hauck, this is the final play of one of America's finest playwrights. Christmas, 1982. Cornelius and Bella McCorkle of Pascagoula, Mississippi, return one stormy midnight from the funeral of their older son to a house and a life literally falling apart. Daughter Joni is in an asylum, and their youngest son, Charlie, is upstairs having sex with his pregnant Holy Roller girlfriend as the McCorkles enter. What ensues is a play of hidden family fortunes, lecherous neighbors, scheming fathers, madness, and even a ghost or two. In this dark, expressionistic comedy, what he called his Southern Gothic Spook Sonata, Williams brilliantly chronicles the fragile state of our world. Show opens May 8th and runs through May 24th at the Bartell Theater, brought to you by Madison Public Theater. More information can be found at thebartelltheater.org. This is WORT 89.9 FM and WORTFM.org.
And we're back.
Saw a story about Robert F. Kennedy Jr. was in the news a lot, and he was talking about people were healthier back in the 60s. And I saw a really interesting story talking
about all the cigarettes they smoked.
Yeah, well, that was it. They're saying that, well, there are some ways in which Americans definitely are not as healthy as they could be, and even some things that have gotten worse. For example, obesity has gotten worse, and that can be tracked over time. That's increased over the years. But some of the interesting things about this is, for example, with high blood pressure. High blood pressure is not higher today. I mean, more people don't have it today than had it in the past. They changed the definition of it for diagnostic reasons. And actually, what it means is that people who have this condition are caught earlier in the process because they're measuring it differently and expanding the boundaries of what it means. And even obesity, you know, it wasn't really considered a disease trackable in that way until 2013. So again, you have certain things that, because we're more sensitive to these things and more aware and our definitions are more precise in some ways, it might look different for that reason. One of the things, too, about the population of the United States in 1960 compared to today that is really markedly different is that in 1963, only 12% of the population was older than 65. And today, of course, it's almost 18%. So right away, if you're looking at the population as a whole, you know right away that's not a good comparison. Mm-hmm. But the thing that you mentioned, that's a great success story. So 42% of adults smoked in 1965. 42%. And now it's only 12%? 12%,
really?
Yeah. And that is a huge change in terms of heart disease and cancer. Some people say, including Secretary Kennedy, says that we lead the world in cancer rates, and that just isn't true. We don't even rank in the top.
Would he say something that's not true?
Yeah, isn't that funny?
Okay.
I think the little devil that whispers in his ear told him that or something.
It's worm.
The worm, yeah. The only way we can count in the top five is if you count white people cancer.
Oh, well, that's
in other words, in other words, non-melanoma skin cancers.
Yeah.
And if you put that in there, if you count that as a cancer, then basically all white people who live in climates that their ancestors did not sort of evolve to, like you look at like Australia, New Zealand, all those people have melanomas. I mean, that's just the way you see these bright red people whose ancestors came from Northern Europe, and you're like, that person's going to get skin cancer. And of course, they're very common, and they're not life threatening.
Sure,
so that's not fair to include that. But what I noticed is just that, you know, there are pluses and there are minuses, and in many respects, I think like a lot of stuff, we judge it by the standards of the day that we live. You know, we think, oh, it's bad, and we don't have any real good way of comparing it to the way things were in the past.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, there are some factors, and we need to get on those that are negative. But in terms of overall health of the population, yeah, it's probably not the case we're unhealthier than we used.
Well, our memory is so selective, too. It's like when people talk about how movies were better or TV shows were better back in the past. It's like, no, they weren't.
Yeah, watch them.
Yeah.
My late grandmother once said, she lived to be in her 90s, and I would usually ask her questions about, you know, what it was like growing up and stuff, you know. I mean, I remember asking her once about swing music. I said, did you guys like swing music? And she said, oh, no, good girls didn't listen to swing music. And I was like, really? I had no idea.
But that's what you think of when
it's like, well. But no, she was talking about, I said, well, what about the movies and all this great
good classic girls don't make history.
Yeah, so. Well, you know, it's just like, what about all those great movies from the back in the day? They're so admiring of those films. And she said, you know what? The actors today are just so much better. Yeah. My grandmother sang this in her 90s, you know. It's like they all thought they were in a stage play back in those days.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure.
So, you know.
They didn't know. They didn't know how to do it. I mean, when they created sound, they were totally lost on how to use that. They were stand here and talk, you know.
So, I mean, I think there's a, I don't know, what the natural thing that we have. I think we like the past because it's closed. You know, we don't like things to be open-ended. We don't like things to be unknown. Everything seems like the beginning of a terrible trend. Now, there are terrible trends out there, and I could name one, which I will not mention, but the name starts with a T. But, I mean, you know, you look at something like that, and you're thinking, okay, that's bad. But, I mean, I think we admire the past because we know what we got. Yeah. You know, we look at that and we say, oh, yeah, well, that makes sense. Yeah. And you know it's over as well.
Right.
So you can have this kind of selective
memory. Yeah, I mean, that's the appeal of something like Make America Great Again. It was like, look how great we were back in the past. But if you really look at it, I mean, I don't want to get into this whole thing, but I mean, there are a lot of things that weren't so great back in the past.
Really?
Let's just leave it at that.
Name two.
Let's just leave it at that.
Name two. That might be where their problem is. Another white people disease, I think, is what we're talking about here.
I don't know what reminded me of this, the way our brains function. I'm reading this book on how brains work in the different parts of the
brain. Or not.
And, you know, everybody's had this experience where they walk into a room and they say, what am I doing here? And then you walk out and then you go, oh, I was looking for my car keys or something.
Yeah.
Apparently there's an evolutionary aspect to that when you would go into someplace new, like you'd walk into a new cave or you know, meadow or something, your brain kind of switches into danger mode, and it sort of shuts off everything else, or at least it puts it on the back
processing
burner.
processing
it's like, what's going on here? Even just walking into a different room, you're like the caveman.
Oh, I love that.
Walking in going, what's going on here? Where's the lion?
That makes total sense.
Yeah, I know.
My mother used to say when she...
And it doesn't mean you're you know, going crazy or getting
My mother used to say when she would do that, she'd say, oh, I walked in here too fast. It was like she was waiting for her brain to catch up with her. I always thought that was funny.
It's sort of the same way of saying it.
I got to walk in here more slowly.
No, you walk in there and you go, danger, Will Robinson. And you got to flail your arms around a little bit. A controversial new Olympic-style sporting event is being planned for next May.
All right.
In Vegas.
Yeah.
It's the one where athletes will be permitted and even encouraged to use performance-enhancing drugs. I think this was a Saturday Night Live skit about 20 years ago.
They'll also be dressed as Ultron.
It'll be the inaugural, and I'm glad they didn't say first annual, because that's not right.
Inaugural
Enhanced Games will take place May 21st through 24th next year at Resorts World on the Las Vegas Strip. Over 4 days, competitors will race, lift, and swim with full access to drugs and therapies banned in virtually every other elite athletic setting.
Wow.
And you'll never guess who one of the investors in this is. Donald Trump Jr.
Oh, really?
You'd think he'd be against drug use. And then the billionaire Peter Thiel is also involved
in
it.
They both need enhancements.
Well, Thiel's one of these billionaires, and this seems to happen.
He's a crazy guy.
Get $1 billion or more, you think you're like kind of godlike. And you can recreate the human race.
Yeah.
And then
Dr. Evil.
He's very big on you know, creating the next type of... you know, metahuman or something. And
Dr. Pretorius.
Yeah. I like the little people in the bottle.
Yeah, those were nice.
That king was a rakish.
He was a corker.
So the pro enhancement games next year. On a related note, I found a story about bodybuilders.
Yeah.
And they have a 14% higher chance of having cardiac arrest.
Oh, dear.
You know.
That's pretty significant.
For some reason.
Yeah. I don't find that look attractive, to tell you the
truth. No, I don't think a lot of people do.
It's not, what is that all for?
The more extreme it gets, too. So
I had a student once like that many years ago. He was on our baseball team, and, you know, he's a good-looking guy, fairly normal. I saw him over the summer. He was doing some kind of work, and I was like, hey, Preston. And he was huge. And I just looked
I'm
at
huge,
him,
Jerry.
And I just looked at him and I just said... I said, are you doing some kind of enhancing drugs, you know? And he turned bright red, which was about all I needed
to know. Well, creatine's a big one now.
Yeah, and I'm just kind of sad for him because it's like, you know, you look fine the way you were. What is it? What are you trying to prove? But, you know, again, it's this infinite competition against everybody in the entire world. So
So I saw two pictures the other day comparing the Wolverine, the actor, whatever his name is. And they had a picture
Jackman.
Hugh Jackman.
Yeah.
And I walked into a different room and my brain shut off there. So.
But I'm always in Marvel Universe. So I knew it right away.
So they had a picture of Hugh Jackman as Wolverine the first movie he was in.
Yeah.
And he had his shirt off and he looked good. I mean, he looked like in shape.
Hugh Jackman, what do you want?
Yeah. And then
he's Jack, man.
Well, that's it. Then they showed the most recent one and it was totally different. It was like all these bulging, veiny, just
his muscles have muscles.
Yeah,
and those have muscles.
And
too.
It looked like a comic book. And so it was just amazing how that had changed over. It's probably been 20 years.
Although that's weird too, because if you see the artist conception, you know, the original drawings of Wolverine from the 1980s, he looks like strong.
Yeah,
but he's not like gigantic.
He's also like 5'4", isn't he?
He's a little guy. Yeah. Hey, I got some list of things. I saw this published in the New York Times this week, a list of things that basically we have as a result of just rando research sponsored by the government. And I don't know why I would bring this story in at this time, but I just here it is. So, for example, the drug Ozempic and Wegovy and some of those other related ones. You can thank Uncle Sam for that. And by the way, a venomous lizard.
Is that where it comes from?
That's where it comes from, yeah. It's a venomous lizard that can survive on just a few meals a year. So in 1980, a researcher, Dr. Jean-Pierre Rauffman, was studying insects and reptile venoms at the National Institutes of Health and discovered that the venom from a Gila monster had a pronounced effect on the pancreas, prompting it to release a digestive enzyme. So that was Dr. Rauffman was the first. And this piqued the interest of another guy, Dr. John Eng. He's an endocrinologist at the Veterans Affairs Medical Center in the Bronx. And he worked with Dr. Rauffman to isolate and identify a novel compound, which they called Exendin-4 in the lizard's venom. And then they made a synthetic version of that. So they were just monkeying around with this Gila monster and found out it had some peculiar thing it could do. And because of that, they discovered this. And of course, these are the so-called GLP-1 receptor agonists, which they're being studied for potential not only for what they're being currently used for diabetics and, of course, for weight loss, but they think that it might cover a range of conditions, including kidney disease, alcohol use disorder, and Alzheimer's. Here's one that I thought was really fascinating. So back during the Apollo years, NASA, right? You can't get a private sector to send people to the moon. At least you weren't able to in the back in the day. They wanted to create the perfect moon drill that would to go up there to get samples. And so they actually came up with a product that became a fixture in American homes. And can you guess what it was?
The electric drill?
The dust buster.
Oh, the dust buster.
There's so much ambient dust on the moon.
Oh, sure.
That you need to get. In fact, it's really can get in everything. That they really needed something that they could use that was lightweight and compact and cordless. So NASA contacted Black & Decker, and they developed this thing called the Apollo Lunar Surface Drill. And this is kind of like Tang, right? I mean, it's like used by the astronauts. And so they realized that this could be used for use at home. So the Dust Buster was invented as a result.
Wow.
So there's a whole bunch of other ones they had, which I just thought were fascinating like that. Just all sorts of things that it's like, well, you know, this is they were doing one thing, and it was just sort of, you know, research that was being funded by us, the people, and in turn, it turned out it had advantages for us.
Mm-hmm.
One quick one I'll say, have you ever heard of the screw worm?
No.
No. And you won't if you're an American, at least not for a while. It was officially declared, we were officially declared screw worm free in 1966. And this was all because of work that was being done, sponsored by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, to find a way to get rid of these. The screw worm is the larval form of a kind of housefly. And it basically, it's a parasite. It burrows into and it feeds on live flesh. Yum, yum, yum. And it plagued cattle and livestock for years, costing hundreds of millions of dollars. And occasionally it would even eat people. It would get it, especially down south. And so it's by the way, it's second. It's Cochleomaya hominivorax, which means man eater. So
wow.
It was that bad. So they figured out a way that they could breed and release sterile males so they could fool the females into mating the population out of existence.
Hmm.
And 2 decades and $750 million later, which would probably be a lot more money today, the sterile insect technique worked, and there have been no screw worms in the United States since.
Well, very good.
So where's the screw worm company that's going to be doing that? I don't think there's going to be one.
Well, we're going to see the law of unintended consequences in hyperdrive here pretty soon, because stuff like that's going to be like, oh, I never thought of that.
And
that's coming back.
Oh, it's like ecological collapse.
Yeah.
We can knock out a few hundred of these little supports and nothing will happen, right?
Then the frogs die, and then the birds die.
Right,
and then
right.
A recent study found a 50% decline in the use of semicolons over the last 2 decades.
Yep.
I love the semicolon. The decline accelerates a long-term trend. In 1781, British literature featured a semicolon roughly every 90 words.
Yep.
By 2000...
Hume is especially a culprit there.
Okay. It had fallen to once every 200 words. Today, there's one every 400 words. 67% of British students never or rarely use a semicolon. More than 50% did not know how to use it. And just 11% describe themselves as frequent users.
I'm a frequent user.
I am too.
I just use it.
I love the semicolon. When I first started working here, I was like writing scripts for the news, you know. Then and I loved semicolons. And I put a semicolon in, and the anchor came out afterwards. And goes, don't ever put a semicolon in my script again.
Nice.
I guess it doesn't really translate to radio.
Yeah. There's a famous quote from Billy Graham. He was once asked back in the 1950s if he believed that the Bible was the inspired word of God. And he said, I believe every semicolon was written by God himself. And someone had to point out to him the semicolon was invented during the Renaissance.
Well, that's funny. Reagan had a semicolon.
Did he? Yeah. Nice.
Another like timely jokes.
Yeah, yeah. Billy Graham? Who the heck is that?
So that reminds me.
Wasn't he the one whose son? Wasn't Franklin Did they have a pool boy or something? I forgot who that was. Or was that?
No, that was the ones from Liberty College.
Oh, no, no, that's somebody else's kid. Yeah, that was somebody else's.
I forget
which one. Spoiled brat.
Not Jimmy Swaggart, but one of them.
What was the guy's name? I can't even remember anymore. He was the big deal back in the 1980s.
Yeah.
Jerry Falwell. And the son's name was... It was Falwell. I remember the son's name. But yeah, he was the one that... He and his wife had an interesting relationship.
Yeah, they did.
They had an add-on.
Yeah, Jerry Falwell Jr. and his wife, Becky.
Yeah, and Raul. Don't leave out Raul.
Let's see. Where's my monkey news?
Okay. Yeah, where's your monkey news?
Okay. Capuchin monkeys.
Oh, yeah, best kind.
Are abducting babies from howler monkeys.
Oh, no.
For fun. They just like, there's no real
like the screw with them.
No real reason to do it, just for being jerks.
Wow.
See, I know we are related to primates because they are such jerks to each other.
Yeah,
Except for the bonobos, and we won't go there.
Yeah, but So they're jerks in a different way.
Yeah. Good one. There's children in the other studio. We better clean it up here.
That's why we have double entendre.
All kinds of children out there. So the capuchins are
capuchins
stealing the howler monkeys. I do a little bit of housekeeping here before we go. Just want to let you know that we're getting new mailboxes in the station.
Oh, indeed.
And so we got a memo saying that we should go in and clean it out, and otherwise they're just going to throw it all away when they put the new ones in.
Yes.
And so I got some old ones here. Yeah. I cleaned out our mailbox just so you don't have to worry about it.
All right.
And there was like about 8 Bob Dole jokes that somebody sent us. About 800 letters from Art Paul. And a memo about how Wart's going to handle Y2K.
So, oh, well, so, there you go.
So they I think we're all pretty much caught up.
They did an excellent job.
Yeah. Let's see. Florida wants to give guns to preschool teachers.
Who? What?
DeSantis signs law letting child care employees train to carry guns at work.
Oh, wow.
Take your damn nap, kid. It's part of their, safety program,
They're prancing towards absurdity.
To protect the guns from other guns, I think. So, but
no, it's part of their plan to make sure that everybody is giving money to the gun company.
Oh, that too, yeah.
That's what it's really all about. It's funny, they always say the same thing. Well, now everybody needs one. Yeah. Right. Hey, here's some advice. I'm not directing this at you, but I just want to let everybody who lives in the Upper Midwest to know that the silent treatment is not nice. You may think it's a mild way of dealing with conflict, but according to Gail Saltz, she's a clinical associate professor of psychiatry at the New York Presbyterian Hospital, it isn't a mild way of dealing with conflict. The silent treatment is a punishment, whether you're acknowledging that to yourself or not. If you, like many of us, are feeling overwhelmed, you're worried about your anger or whatever it is, then here's what you should do. According to Kipling Williams, emeritus professor of psychological sciences at Purdue, said you can just ask for a timeout. You can say, I can't talk to you right now. I'm really upset, so I'm going to go for a walk, and I'll be back in a little bit.
Mm.
And then give yourself a little time to and come back and be willing to talk when you come back. But don't so you don't leave things like unresolved.
Yeah.
It's not fun for the person who's on the receiving end, and it's actually kind of cruel.
So. I was. Long time ago, I was talking to a therapist, and yeah. I'd only seen her a couple times, so I wasn't really, sure what she was all about yet.
Sure.
But I explained that, my partner would go through these long stretches where she'd get mad at me and not talk to me, not say a word.
Yeah.
And how unnerving that was.
Yeah.
And the therapist looked at me and in the most condescending way said, well, that's known as the silent treatment. That was the last time I went to her, by the way. Hey, the Chicago Sun-Times put out a supplement, Summer 2025.
All right.
And, for things to do in the summer.
Sure.
There's lots of activities, especially around Chicago. And, and also things like summer reading. They had a summer reading list.
Oh, well.
And there was one problem with the summer reading list.
Okay.
Most of the books do not exist. Because they had AI create the reading list, and it created like three quarters of them.
Here's magical realism. This is that library that are all imaginary books. Yeah.
And they would use like real authors' names. Like, this is such and such from Stephen King.
Right.
And Stephen King has never written anything like that.
The sun sometimes rises.
Yeah.
Boysenberry Finn.
The grapes of peaches, you know? Yeah, <right. laughs> Whatever. But so just
nice.
and they printed it and they distributed it, and it's like here's a bunch of books that don't exist. Go
see,
read
this
these.
Is why humans are needed. Humans are needed to keep our robot masters from messing up too badly. We'll always be valuable.
Hey, it's time to go. We're declaring the weekend, so enjoy the weekend, and it's a long one too. For
yeah, it's
people,
a long so. Weekend, mm-hmm. And beware the midges. I think the midges. I think the population is going down right now, but it's a frenzy out there at present. So beware.
Feeding frenzy and
well, yes.
You're on
among
the,
other
you're
things.
On the menu. So, yes. But all right, Pants, it was great to see you. Have
you
a great
try.
Week, everybody. Thanks for listening. It is 2 o'clock, and you are listening to WRT 89.9 FM Madison. Stick around. The kiosk is next. After that, Who Cooks for You with somebody. I don't know. Nobody's here yet, but somebody will be here probably. So. Bye. Have a good week.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Friday, May 23rd.
This is Bird Note. Does this bird seem to be saying, Chicago, Chicago? Don't be misled. This small ground bird, the California quail, is strictly a bird of the far west. The California quail's gray and rusty colored body is beautifully adorned. And the most distinctive characteristic of this quail is a black forward-facing topknot that juts out from the bird's forehead like a small flag. Although quail can fly short distances, they spend most of their time on the ground foraging for food.